Hey, whoa. Whoa, hey. Walk. Walk. Whoa, up.
Any woman could do that, couldn't they? I never realised.
You have to have quite a pair of horses, perhaps, yeah.
I never realised you walked so fast with it.
They should go a little bit slower. I mean, these only just come out of the stable, so give them half a day at that and they'll steady up.
Yes. Tell me what about the different bits of this plan.
Yeah. It starts at the front.
Yeah. You've got wheels on this.
We've got wheels on it. You don't have to have wheels. It certainly makes the job easier if there are wheels, but the conditions we've got today was very, very muddy. You'd probably better use a plough without wheels. A swing plough. Much more difficult. You've really got to have a steady pair of horses to use a swing plough. But the wheels basically determine the width and the depth of your ploughing. And depending on what you're growing, depends on the depth of your ploughing. I'm ploughing with a 4.5-5 inches deep and about 9 inches wide. And the wheel measurement from the inside of the furrow wheel, which is the big wheel that runs in the furrow, measurement from the furrow wheel to the knife coulter, which is that one, is your width of your furrow, and that's determined by altering the wheel. Obviously, take the wheel in, it's a narrow furrow, take it out, and it's a wide furrow. And then the small wheel, which is the land wheel and runs on the land, the difference in the height from the measurement from the bottom of the land wheel to the bottom of the furrow wheel is your depth of plough. So that determines the...
And you're ploughing for cereal grain.
Yeah.
That's why you're ploughing fairly
shallow. Fairly shallow, yeah. 4.5 inches, something like that.
Yeah. What's this thing here?
That one actually takes the vertical cut. So if you imagine this is a slice of cake, really, that's slicing in vertical. And then plough share there, which actually takes...
Is that what's called a coulter?
The coulter, yeah, that's a coulter. And then the share, which takes the horizontal. Mm. And you're basically taking a slice of earth, and then a mould board, which actually does the turning. Mm. So that's actually the earth slides along when you turn it over. And the theory being you invert the whole of the ground. So you're covering up all any weeds, any rubbish. If you're ploughing grassland, you're covering up the grassland. That's about it. The one on the front there is called a skim coulter. That really is like a miniature plough. And that actually isn't working at the moment because we're not in ground that's got a lot of rubbish on the top. If you set that one down, that takes a tiny furrow from just in front of the coulter, the knife coulter. And that will then prevent any grass or any stubble that's growing poking through there, because you've taken that little slice off with a spin coulter.
You're ploughing with two horses now.
Yeah.
But in medieval England, they often had 4, sometimes up to 8. Why would they have so many horses?
I think two reasons. One is the technology of the plough. It wasn't until the sort of middle of the 1700s, I think, that they developed this type of plough. So the other plough is actually a lot heavier. Mm. If you imagine that, once you've cut into that, although it's not easy, it's easier than if you've got a mould board, which I think on the very primitive ones was almost just like a slice of wood, almost like a digging implement rather than a turning implement. But two horses on, this is medium land, it's getting on the clay side. If you were in heavy clay, a pair of horses probably wouldn't pull it, you'd want 3 horses, sometimes 4. And land often referred to as
two-horse land, meaning that you needed two horses to pull the plough.
Mm.
Three horse land, three. Mm. So it's a very, very rarely was a single horse.
Mm.
Always at least a pair of horses.
Yes. In the south of Europe, they used to have very thin and insubstantial ploughs without any wheels at all, just scratching along the top of the sort of sandy soil. Obviously up here in the north here, you can see what sort of wet and clayey soil you've got up here. You really needed something very powerful to pull through this, didn't you?
Yeah.
And one ox would do nothing here, would it, really?
No, you because of literally just the weight and the weight it's pulling through, you want something that just did a scratch. You wouldn't scratch much of this sort of heavy land.
Mm. So you've got here a very powerful machine for producing things. But in many societies, this is just the beginning of the agricultural process. And most of the labour in, for example, if you're growing rice, goes into weeding.
Right.
I mean, how do you deal with the problems of weeds?
Weeding pre sort of chemicals, obviously, to kill weeds. It was a manual process, or as they're manual often, a horse implement process. If you plough, and this is the importance of having straight ploughing, if you plough and you sow broadcast, basically the seed will fall in between the furrows, you harrow it over, and in theory, it comes up in nice straight rows. Now you can either send a man and a woman in to go along the rows and weed, or a horse hoe, which is pulled by a single horse, and it's set so that it just takes out the weeds from between the crop. If you're growing root crops, the root crops are grown on slightly wider, so it makes it a slightly easier job. And you can use a horse scuffle, which is the same principle, it pulls out the weed. Hoeing between the plants was still a hand thing,
but it was only part of it.
Oh yes, yeah.
So you overcome the problem. The other thing, I noticed these are quite long, straight bits that you're doing. One theory is that in the north of Europe, where you had these wheeled ploughs and these horses' teams, it was quite difficult to turn a plough like this, but especially if you say you had eight horses and you had a medieval plough. And so it's very difficult to turn it. And as a result, you've got these very long furrows in these fields.
I think furlong is derived from furrow long, which was something to do with the length of the furrow that the horses or the oxen could plough. I think if you go back far enough, I think even with oxen, because you had, say, six or eight oxen, you ploughed, I think, in almost a figure of eight, which enabled you to turn round.
Mm.
By the time you get to horse ply, often pair of horses and a plough like this, you need about 8 yards at the end, so you can turn fairly easily.
Mm.
But once they've developed this type of plough.
If you look at this rich, wet soil here, can you imagine the situation of some German Anglo-Saxon farmer who was trying to grow stuff on here in the 8th, 9th century? Basically, if he decided to do what they do in many parts of the world, which is to just get a spade and dig it, or get a hoe and go at it like that, there would be very little chance, wouldn't there, Steve, of growing enough food to feed yourself.
Yeah, that's right. You need something, an implement that will turn the thing over, and a fairly powerful animals to pull the thing. Yeah.
Yes. So you basically had to be very inventive. You had to combine iron, once again, an iron implement, with animal power. These hugely powerful machines, the first machines really before industrialization. This is the predecessor of the steam engine. And you need to link the two together. And on the basis of that, and overcoming the appalling problems which we see today with all this rain and wetness and coldness and hard and clayey soil, if you can think of an ingenious mechanical solution to getting something out of the soil using these techniques, then you can make a reasonable living. In many societies, all you needed to do was to add water, seeds and human labour. You didn't need any of this paraphernalia at the beginning. You didn't need anything to turn the soil except human labour. So you don't get into this machine kind of invasive technology of the soil. You don't need to work at the soil with machines. Forget machines. Just use your own human back and strength and hack away at the soil, and you can produce a decent living. So you're beginning here to supplement or replace human labour with machinery, whereas in many parts of the world you never need to do that. So you don't begin to think about machines which will help human beings. The extensions, I mean, these horses are basically an extension or a supplement for our backs. Mm-hmm. They're slaves which are a sort of working to relieve our own backs. Mm-hmm. And although you know perfectly well it's quite hard work ploughing, it would certainly be harder work digging all this up by hand. So I think, I mean, we've probably said everything, which is that basically two kinds of worlds. One, muddy, wet, cold, but full of machines and animal machines, as well as steel and iron machines. And the other, full of human beings working with their own arms, legs, and nothing else. And so you begin to get the divergence of civilizations from the Middle Ages onwards. And one ends up with the Industrial Revolution, and the other ends up with intensive rice cultivation. So, I think I'd rather be in Japan, I must say. But
I would today.
I would today. Anyway, thanks very much.
No problem.